I mean, if you're going to play Hendrix on a psychedelic coast-to-coast, you got to go in for the trippy part there in the middle. And music plays a big part, by the way, of the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide. We'll get back to that along with what may be future applications for a now-banned drug. Where will they be doing these studies to determine whether or not LSD still has the original therapeutic effect that it had? What countries might allow it, and where could you go to get it if you need it? Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Dr. James Fadiman, author of the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide. We left off with the conversation. We were talking about antidepressants and how the pharmaceutical industry has found this is obviously a huge moneymaker. But I would be surprised somehow if they couldn't find a way to make money off something like LSD. Only because, as you said, it seems like a fairly simple thing to make. It's not very expensive. You need rye seeds, right? And it doesn't take much to get much out of it. So why would there not be a profit margin for the pharmaceutical industry for that?
Well, there might be, and that's always a question. But also, it's been around for a long time. And it has already passed probably the legal limits where you could control it. But that isn't really why it's illegal. And while it is illegal, there is research going on now for the first time in 40 years, not underground, and at very respectable places. Harvard, Johns Hopkins, NYU, UCLA are all working with psychedelics very successfully. So we're really into what someone has called a renaissance of this research.
Okay, why, if it's a, what did you call it, a Schedule One?
Yeah, Schedule One says the government has decided that there's no use for it. But what we're finding is, and there are regulations, as there are always regulations, that if you get permission and you jump through enormous number of hoops, now the government is saying, if you jump through all the hoops, we'll allow you to do research. What happened before was if you went through all the hoops, you got to the last hoop and they said, nah, we changed our mind.
Okay.
So it is not allowed and it's still illegal, but it is no longer totally off the shelves. And probably that's partly due to all the wonderful research that's being done worldwide with marijuana. So we're looking at drugs that change consciousness, but also have a lot of medical uses.
So the autism study, does it come out of this renaissance in LSD research?
Not yet. The autism work that was done when it was still legal, there were about 7 studies, and these were what were called severely autistic children. These were children who really had to be more than in a special school, almost in an institution. And they didn't relate, and they didn't read, and they often didn't speak, and they were incredibly locked inside a very disturbed genetic body. And what was found, and this is again early work, and they really didn't quite know what they were doing, so they would give them LSD every day or every other day and just allow them to play with the other children. But I'll just give you one moment. Though this is work by Gary Fisher, and a little girl who had not spoken in several years had LSD and walked over to Gary, who's sitting in the room observing her, and puts her hand on his knee, looks up at him, makes full eye contact, and says, "We're all one, aren't we?" And he nods and says, "Yes, that's so." And she nods and takes her hand off his knee and goes back quietly and sits where she was sitting in the other side of the room. Now, that's a huge shift in her behavior.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And it's a very moving, and when I looked at that, I thought, oh, the number of children we might have been helping for 40 years.
Right.
Might have been wonderful. Now, it might not work out, but my goodness, with those kind of possibilities, why not? Why not look at it?
Well, even anecdotally, I mean, even just to say there may not be the empirical evidence, maybe the studies weren't done right, whatever, But if you have a kid who's never walked or hasn't walked in 5 years,
right.
take, you know, say a piece of bread, eat the bread,
yeah.
get up, walk across the room and say, wow, it feels good to walk again. And then walk back across the room again. Give that kid more bread.
Exactly.
Right?
So we had those studies. And again, like the alcoholics, a number of kids, again, they didn't march out of the room and say, I want to be in third grade now and thanks for the institution. But they were able to relate more easily. They were less upset. They were much higher up the scale toward healthy
right.
than they had been before the study started.
It sounds like Robert De Niro in Awakenings.
A little bit.
I mean, not a panacea, but wow, what an interesting sort of turn of events from somebody that had previously been sort of written off. And so, in many cases, that's what happens with
You were asking earlier about, you know, where does it go and how is it metabolized?
Yeah.
And more to the point is what it seems to do. And what it seems to do is open the awareness capacity that you have just wider and bigger.
Where is that in the brain?
In the brain.
Where is the awareness capacity?
To what goes on inside your own brain and also more open to the world around you.
Where is the awareness capacity in the brain?
Oh, my. I wish I knew. It probably is all over the brain, particularly in the higher functions that are, you know, true for mammals and primates and us. But what Aldous Huxley said in the best book of description still ever written, called The Doors of Perception, is the valve that restricts awareness is opened. And life, you have to restrict awareness so you can function. You have to categorize things. I mean, I'm looking at the moment at a bookcase, and I can see individual books, and I can see titles, and I know something about each of the books. And those are all little categories in my head. But
right.
all my eyeballs are seeing is different shades of color in vaguely rectangular shapes. And those colors are not particularly of interest to me, you know, cognitive person. But if I were taking a psychedelic, I would also be aware of all those colors, and I'd be aware of the different ages of the books, the different levels of fatigue, so to speak, and how some of them are slightly leaning and how that's aesthetically beautiful. And that's more and more and more and more information. And eventually, I'm going to want to close my eyes because there's too much information, and I'm going to want to find out information that comes from inside my head, which is of a whole nother order.
On LSD, at any point do those books start to talk to you?
I may see them take on, you know, funny shapes. They may start to melt and dribble out of the bookcase. And I will look at that and I will say to myself, because I know about these things, I'd say, isn't that an amazing image happening? It looks as if they're melting, but I happen to know they're not. Because I've seen my visual field go into wonderful places before. So that they may, one of them may wish to talk to me, but I will also know that that is partly my own mind and partly my knowing that book. I may have an experience where it feels like an angelic force is talking to me, or a Buddha is talking to me. And these are much more important events, and those happen, of course, at somewhat higher doses. We haven't even talked about the difference between low and high dose.
No.
And it's very, very, very important.
To wrap up the autism conversation, one of those studies said, I don't have the number in front of me, but something like 91 kids studied, and 75 out of the 91 kids
right.
showed good to excellent improvement or
yep.
response.
Yep.
That I mean, again, that's like in the
yep.
that I mean, any kind of, we hear a lot of drugs, you know, the efficacy is 15% and it gets approved by the FDA.
Right. Now, so the question that is realistic is why was it banned given this kind of work with alcoholics, with autism, with normal neurosis? And the reason that it was banned is that the government was very frightened about the hippies and the 60s movements. Right. Remember, these were these young people who said, I don't think war is a good idea, and I don't want to do it. And the government said, but it's a patriotic thing, and you've got to go to Vietnam and kill people because they're going to come over and kill us.
Right.
And people would say, you know, that doesn't really make any sense.
That doesn't really wash. It never really did.
And so the government was saying, now, this is frightening. And the students were saying, I think my university is teaching a lot of things that are worthless. And the university said, wait a moment, this is not okay.
Right.
So the awakened, you know, the people using psychedelics were questioning the culture very hard. Now, out of that came also the women's movement, the ecology movement, the civil rights movement. These are all things that questioned the culture very hard. So the government really felt that they were losing control of the youth. And what was even more true is the young person would come home and say to their parents, I think you're just working for the money. And I don't think that's a healthy way to live. Or you're just working for the power. I don't think that's a healthy way to live. And so there was a great deal of upset parents and equally upset children. And so the government, in a kind of frenzy, and we've seen this happen before, say, after 9/11, where there was a frenzy of laws that seemed to have, you know, very little to do with planes and buildings. And, you know, we attacked a country which had none of the hijackers and so forth and so on. We do things when we're upset.
Hey, we got a country with one of the countries had hijackers. We got that one, too.
So. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, let's not. We threw that one in.
It's quite true.
We got them first, and then we went for the one that didn't. But
right.
Let's just, okay.
Right. No, I think that's a very good correction.
Okay.
But you get the idea.
Yeah, I sure do. I think that's a fair point. It's the question drug.
Yeah.
It's the disobedient drug.
It's the questioning drug, and therefore the government wanted to stop somebody. And somebody, and I have this fantasy that they're sitting in a room and they say, all these thousands of kids are causing all this trouble. We have to stop them. And someone said, well, they're all getting it from illegal sources already. We can't stop those people because we don't do very well with crime.
Right.
And someone said, can't we stop someone?
Yeah.
And then somebody, and I will never forgive them if I ever find them, said, why don't we stop all the researchers? And someone else said, well, that will stop someone. And so literally letters went out to about 60 different research projects in the United States alone. And the letters said, if you open this letter, your experimental drug license is canceled. Your research stops. Now, I happen to remember that very vividly because we were doing research with senior scientists using these LSD at a much lower dose for hard science, you know, physics, math, biology, computer design, architecture, hard problems. And we opened this letter, and in our treatment room, which looks like a very comfortable living room, we have four senior scientists who are about to sit up and work on their problems. And I was very much the youngest member of our research team, and I looked at the letter and I said, I think we got this letter tomorrow. And indeed, we then went in and worked with our senior scientists, and they made remarkable breakthroughs on their problems, and then our study was over.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, it sounds so typical of how the powers that be in the 60s and early 70s felt so threatened by chaos and had no answer for it. And I say chaos here only in the sense of people that were questioning and not just following the dance floor steps that were painted out for them.
Yeah.
Right? Here's all you have to do. Just follow this and you're all going to be good. And I've been highly influenced by that myself. And it really wasn't until I read your book that I went, guess I've been wrong about that for a long time. And I still don't have any desire to do LSD, but I am curious about where some of the other research is that's going on with LSD. So what country allows it, and what are some of the things that they're doing right now?
Well, let's talk about the research done in the United States, because that's obviously the most interesting right now. And as I say, research is coming back. And let me talk about one study done at UCLA and now being replicated at Johns Hopkins, where they're taking people with late cancer. Late cancer is a kind of layman's term for you're not going to get better. And so these were people who are going to die. And among those people are people who then become incredibly anxious, not without reason, but so anxious that the last few months of their lives are clearly terrible. And their family feels terrible. They feel terrible. The medical staff around them feels terrible. Now, people in this particular state, late-stage cancer, were given in a safe, supportive setting with trained staff a dose of psilocybin. Now, psilocybin, we haven't talked about. It has the same effects of LSD, only it's a slightly, it takes a few less hours. Psilocybin comes from over 100 species of mushrooms contain psilocybin. It's a naturally formed substance. Well, they have an experience in which they are able to recognize the problems of their own anxiety. They may step outside of their personality, as we've talked about. And in some sense, they seem to report an enormous sense of inner peace. They're very sorry they're going to die. This is not being silly about it. But they also are aware that they can get an enormous amount out of the months they have left, that they still are in love with their husband or wife or children, that they can enjoy nature, that they can enjoy, you know, taking walks. And this shift is enormously beneficial not only to the person who's dying, but obviously to the whole family and to the extended family and realistically to the medical staff who's helping them. So this is one study that was done, and it was published in one of the major prestigious peer-reviewed journals. And because it was published, and this is an interesting side effect, was published in one of those journals that most of us, I assure you, don't read. But there were over 300 media mentions, descriptions of the study, within a week or two of it being published in this high-end, high-science journal. Now, what's going on when it's so exciting to the media? And when I'm not talking about the hippie media. We're talking about articles in the Wall Street Journal. We're talking about the Scottish Sporting News. A wide range talked about.
I didn't even know there was Scottish Sporting News.
I know. It's a wonderful one. And that's the one that had an art. The headline was Shrooms Get You High. Says, by the way, that the readers knew what they were talking about.
Right.
Because we haven't talked about the fact that this is illegal hasn't stopped its use at all. You know, remember Prohibition?
Right.
Prohibition was what created a massive amount of hard drinking in the United States. And when you prohibited psychedelics, which were enormously popular, what happens is, and I'm giving you the U.S. government figures, which we think are the low end, the U.S. government says 23 million Americans have used LSD, and that 400,000 to 600,000 will use it next year, meaning people who have never tried it. So part of my book is to say, if you're going to use these substances, which are so powerful and which work well in these very controlled, safe situations, by God, make it as safe a situation as you can.
Got to jump. We'll get back to this coming up on Coast to Coast. Well, you know, when you think about psychedelic songs, you think Kenny Rogers, right? Well, kind of, actually. It really was an LSD song, but it was intended to be a warning against using LSD. I remember that. So, theoretically, an anti-LSD song, but like so many other things in our pop culture in the 60s, it kind of walked the line a little bit. Wanted you to think about it, but don't do it. But think about it, but don't do it. It's kind of funny to me. But I guess maybe I'm doing something similar. I'm saying think about the research, legitimate research that is being done and the therapeutic ways that LSD might actually help. But for everybody else, don't. I'm not saying take illegal drugs, but I am saying is that LSD has perhaps a future if we look at it honestly and openly, and we'll get back to that conversation next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Okay, I just say admit it. You may not want to. It might have been a guilty pleasure, but come on, Dr. James Fadiman, it was good to hear Kenny Rogers in the first edition again, right?
Always a pleasure.
Come on, it's so funny to hear that song. It was used in The Big Lebowski. I think that's the reason why a lot of people know the song to this day.
Right.
Here's a little trivia for you. So who does the guitar solo and just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in?
Oh, my God, you're just pushing me now.
I am.
You're going to now say, have you taken so many drugs you've forgotten?
Glenn Campbell.
No.
Yes. He was a studio musician at the time, and he did the guitar solo for that song. But again, another guy you don't ordinarily associate with psychedelics.
No, not at all.
But a guy who also, by the way, I don't know if you've seen the stories recently, he has Alzheimer's. And so I wonder whether, you know, as you were mentioning LSD playing a role in people who are in kind of in hospice care.
Sure.
I wonder what other ways that might be used to help for patients who are going through brain diseases in as much as it helps put people outside of the condition that they're in.
Well, it may. And again, the fact that we haven't been able to do research for 40 years makes all these wonderful questions you're coming up with a little tricky to answer.
Sure.
My off-the-top-of-the-head guess is that the brain damage is going to be there when the LSD leaves. And so there might be, you know, a few hours that might be very different, but the overall condition, my guess is, not going to improve. However, my guess is often wrong. That's what research is about. I mean, let me give you a totally different kind of study. John Hopkins, in this case, let's be respectable. And this was questioning whether if you gave people who were interested in having a spiritual experience, a psychedelic, again, in a safe, supportive setting with trained staff, would they have a spiritual experience just because they wanted one? And the literature says that a lot of people who drop at concerts have spiritual experiences and so forth. And guess what? People, about 76% of the people in the study, reported that they'd had a major spiritual experience. Now, these were healthy normals, and they were interested in these things, and they found it was an enormous boost to what they felt was possible in their own spiritual lives. And in a much earlier study that I was part of, we asked 100 people who'd taken psychedelics only once, but in a much higher dose than the John Hopkins, how important or valuable the experience was. And about 78% said it was either among or the most important single experience in their entire lives. Hmm. So that's pretty unusual. That's worth exploring, just as you pointed out with the autism. It's worth exploring. And we're a very spiritual country, and it would be perhaps of value if people could have profound spiritual experiences in a safe, secure setting.
Well, I'm reminded of Mary Meyer. That name may not jump out at you, but she was one of President Kennedy's mistresses.
Oh, yes.
Right. And and she was found murdered sometime later on. But she took LSD, and she's the one who's credited with giving the president LSD.
That is correct.
And the Kennedy, he took LSD, and she part of the reason why she was taking it, if I remember her biography, was because of her depression.
I believe you're correct. And we don't know why Kennedy took it, except that she was one of his girlfriends.
Right.
But we also know that it didn't seem to harm his functioning.
Well, he had a lot of back pain, and I think he might have been willing to try anything to get relief from the the various ailments that were affecting him. So it might have been heck worth a try in 5 hours upstairs in the White House when Jackie wasn't there, is where they supposedly is where they really did it. But
Well, the people that Mary hung out with were not people who were interested in back pain. They were interested in more of these kind of spiritual experiences, or feeling closer to nature, or feeling more content inside. It is likely, however, that during the psychedelic experience itself, an enormous number of kind of ongoing physical problems seem to go away for a while. And one that, to me, is more interesting than back pain is stuttering. People taking LSD who stutter during the time when they're using having the experience tend not to stutter. And a couple of cases I know, people who have cured themselves of stuttering in one single session. And this is a piece of research I just love to do because it's so easy to do, and you really know whether you're successful or not.
Yeah, that would be an easy one to be able to track, a before and after.
Exactly.
Right. And I think that's the kind of thing that is intriguing for other people out there, too, who are thinking about this. But I mentioned earlier other countries that are doing this kind of research. Maybe I should have been more exact. Where could one go if one were wanting to have a legal experience like this?
Well, if one wants to work with certain other substances, plant substances, something called ayahuasca, in particular, there are places in South America where you can have these kind of healing experiences. People go for physical problems, for alcoholism. There's another particular plant, originates in Africa, called iboga, chemical ibogaine. There are clinics, again, in a number of South American countries where people can go and overcome drug addiction, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine addictions. This is, again, remarkable work. Some of it was done in the United States, but then the government got nervous and those got pushed out. But in terms of just going someplace and having a spiritual experience with LSD, at this point, I can't find a place that a citizen can go to. There are studies, and you have to have either a particular physical problem or another need before you can get in the study, and there are not many people in the studies. And so one of the things that I have to deal with is really nice people who write me and say, I had LSD 40 years ago, and I've done this, and I've done that, and I've had a nice life, and I've been a good person, and I'd really like to have LSD once more now that I'm in my 70s, my 80s. And who can you just tell me where I should go, or could you just send me some LSD? And my answer is, one is, no, I can't tell you where to go, and two, please don't write me.
Right.
And there do exist in the United States several hundred people who actually, underground, act as guides and do help people. And again, I've met some of them, not knowing their last names, but I've listened to them, and they've had a lot of training. And so, you know, what we know is that there is a free market economy for what people need. And if something is illegal, it's harder to get, and it isn't done as well, and there are no regulations and controls, but it's still around. So there are opportunities, but really, it's not a Craigslist event.
No. So you mentioned before, even low dose, and there's a difference between the very lowest doses and the high doses of LSD. There aren't even any versions of a low dose LSD that's being used in other drugs or for other applications under other names?
No. Okay. I mean, there are a lot of things that are kind of pseudo marijuana that are out there, and some of them are actually pretty scary and have hurt people. But in terms of psychedelics, there doesn't seem to be things that are like them that are... No, that isn't quite true. There are some plants which are known to the psychedelic world, which are legal, which have usually a short-term intense psychedelic effect, very short-term, like 15, 20 minutes. And there is one website that I have nothing to do with called E-R-O-W-I-D, Erowid, that simply says, we're an information resource, and tell us what you know, and we'll put it online. And they get about 50 to 60,000 hits a day of people wanting information. And there are literally several dozens and dozens of chemicals, drugs, plants, the slime off certain toads,
right,
et cetera, that have some of these effects. So they're, you know, the web makes everything about information possible. But in terms of where are we as a country or even as a world, at this point we can't say that there are places where you can simply go for the weekend.
Right. So what you mentioned before was very important to discuss the difference between the low dose and the high dose.
Yeah. Yeah, give me just a moment. I'll run it through very, very quickly.
Okay.
Okay. Remember, we're talking millionths of a gram, which is far less than a little flick on the tip of your fingertip. And if we start at the bottom, which is 10 micrograms, which is called a microdose or subperceptual, or it doesn't seem to have any visual effect, none of the psychedelic colors, et cetera, et cetera. Seems to act just as a general energizer for the day. So people who try 10 micrograms at the end of the day say, you know, that was a pretty good day. I got a little bit more done. I was a little more focused. I noticed I ate a smaller lunch. I enjoyed my exercise. You know, you have those days. And that seems to be its primary effect. And I'm actually getting reports from all over the country at the moment about that because nothing's been published. Now, if we go up a step from 10 micrograms now to 100 micrograms, then we're at the level where people can solve technical problems if they are incredibly highly motivated to do so. And again, that research has been published, and a bunch of it's in my book. This is the senior scientist stuff we talked about earlier.
Right.
If you go up into the 200 range, that's the medical therapeutic range. That's where people can make breakthroughs about alcoholism, about neurosis, about phobias, all kinds of things in that area. But then when you get even higher into the, say, 400 microgram range, then you're dealing with people that tend to have these most important experiences of their life events, transcendent experiences, mystical experiences, classical religious experiences, things that make you understand what the major spiritual systems are about. Above that, people tend not to remember much of what happened.
So the kinds of experiences you've had personally.
Sure.
Can I ask, you know, and if you need to take the fifth, I understand, Doctor. But
well, the nice thing about your past is as long as you haven't committed crimes in your past, they can't get you for it.
Okay.
And I worked as a legal researcher at a time when psychedelics were legal.
So,
and that's when I had most of my important experiences.
Well, that's why I was going to ask you, when was the last time you used LSD?
Yeah, I think you're right. I'll take this if. But also,
that was a good preamble to that. I got to say, it was a really good dipsy do, and that might have worked in a deposition.
Well, the thing that I've learned, because I'm now hanging out with lots of college students, is they have had more experiences than I have, and I've got quite a few decades on them,
right?
Because they are experimenting much more wildly than we ever could. Partly because there's so much drugs available. If you are interested in almost any psychedelic drug or plant, And there are three places where I've been told you can get almost anything. And that is almost any prison, almost any college, and most high schools.
Yeah.
And I remember after a talk, a young man comes up to me and says, high schools are best.
Yeah.
So we live in a very peculiar culture where, you know, you're carded at 7-Eleven if you want to buy a beer until you're 40, but that you have access to marijuana and other psychedelics without any regulation at all.
Right.
And what the government says is, according to their surveys of high school, that just, for example, marijuana is more available than alcohol to young people.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I'm this funny person that says, I want regulation. I want laws that protect people from inferior products and also to protect young people from having too much access.
You know, I was mindful of that earlier this week, the recent Congressional Medal of Honor winner, who's a Marine, who was on with David Letterman. He's the same guy who had a beer in the Rose Garden with President Obama. But he said, Letterman asked him, because he grew up on a farm in Kentucky, and Letterman said, so what are you growing down there? And the guy kind of gave this sort of half smirk. And he said, you mean what Kentucky's growing or what we're growing? Because we all know the number one cash crop out of Kentucky is marijuana.
Right.
And it would be a way, I think, to solve a lot of financial problems for a lot of states.
Well, I'm out in California, and we're, you know, fussing with whether we're going to make marijuana legal. And the argument is, would you rather spend $1.5 billion keeping thousands of people in prison, or would you rather have $1.5 billion in taxes paid to you by people who smoke marijuana?
Who are going to do it anyway.
And who are smoking it anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, what several people who smoke marijuana who I know have said is, can you imagine we all would love to pay the tax?
Right.
Now, what else? You know, they say, what other product or people in the United States are saying, tax us, tax us, tax us.
Right. Tax us and regulate it so that we make sure of its quality.
Exactly.
All right. Now, so if you were president, James Fadiman.
Right.
Dr. President, Mr. Dr. President, if you were, would you make LSD legal or would you just decriminalize it for regulatory purposes?
Well, I think LSD is much too powerful to have, you know, an over-the-counter use. Now, I've just, you know, all those people I said you turned off a while back,
right.
I just turned them off. But they're using rather low doses. What I would say is the same thing I would say about a driver's license, which is if you're going to do something which is potentially wonderful and has some other dangers, I want you to be able to know what you're doing before I'd let you do it.
Sure.
So driving is not illegal.
No.
But it is absolutely illegal if you haven't proved that you know what you're doing.
Right.
So that's a very different regulatory mechanism.
Well, excellent point. All right. So it's a great way to set us up for your calls. Coming up, we'll give you all the numbers you need to join the conversation. The Psychedelic Explorer's Guide, Safe, Therapeutic, and Sacred Journeys. We didn't talk a lot about the sacred, but they're there too. And it's all there in the book. Dr. James Fadiman will take your calls about LSD, not advocating for its illegal use, but I think you get a good tone of the conversation here as we head into the last hour on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.